Böll Spotlight, a podcast from the Heinrich Böll Foundation.
In recent years, governments around the world have been trying to tackle big tech that has fundamentally reshaped the modern world. Companies like Google and Meta and their platforms like YouTube and Instagram have revolutionized communication, commerce, and access to information. The power and influence of these tech giants is unparalleled, and more often than not, their immense impact surpasses the speed at which governments can act.
How do we make the tech giants pay their fair share? How do we regulate information online and perhaps more pertinent?
In Canada, the government's been rolling out a package of digital legislation meant to take some of that control back. In 2023, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's Liberal government passed two new bills in Canada, Bill C-11 and C-18. Bill C-11, also known as the Online Streaming Act, aims to regulate online streaming platforms in the same way they do with traditional TV and radio. Bill C-18, or the Online News Act, requires tech companies like Google and Meta to compensate news organizations for linking their content. But these two bills have come with a lot of controversy.
Madam Speaker, for this opportunity to rise again and speak to this government's disastrous bill, Bill C-11.
This is an attack on Canadian content. This is an attack on CRTC.
Why is this government so hell-bent on censoring people's freedom of speech?
I'm Haley Choi, and this is Böll Spotlight. In this episode, we'll take a closer look at Bill C-11 and C-18. How will these bills affect the average Canadian? Why are there so many critics? And what does this mean for legislation in Europe?
C-11 is the Online Streaming Act in Canada. You know, as for why it was introduced, one of the values we have as Canadians is that we seek to protect and promote what we refer to as Canadian content, or CanCon for short.
Fass Bednar is the executive director of the Masters of Public Policy and Digital Society program at McMaster University. She does a lot of research on competition, markets, and how to make them work better for everyone.
Basically, with C-11, we sought to expand the requirements we had on traditional broadcasters like cable television, radio, in terms of the amount of Canadian content that they make available. We sought to extrapolate this to streaming platforms.
As Canadians watch less and less from Canadian broadcasters and turn more to Netflix, Disney Plus, or HBO Max, Bill C-11 tries to give a leg up to Canadian content. Since these American streaming services are taking from the Canadian market, the idea is that they now need to pay into it. That's where Bill C-11 comes in. Essentially, Bill C-11 would give the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, or CRTC, the power to regulate these online streaming platforms like traditional broadcasters and require them to support and promote Canadian content. Matt Hatfield, executive director of the grassroots organization Open Media, says there are two main targets of the bill.
One is funding. So a lot of people who've traditionally benefited from the offline Canadian broadcasting system were worried their funding was either going down or could go down in the future with the decline of television and radio use. And those people wanted to make sure that funding going into the online audiovisual system was also going to be available to them. But that is actually the less controversial side. The more controversial side, I think, is that in the offline system, we have these kind of content quotas, where radio, for example, you have to play 30% Canadian music.
Content quotas are predetermined goals or limits set for creating or distributing specific types of content. They're used to ensure a certain level of diversity or balance in various industries, especially in media, publishing, or broadcasting.
Now, radio tends to play with that, and so it'll often be like late nights will be much more Canadian than prime time. But it is a quota system that did lead to quite an elevated rate of Canadian content reaching people.
Applying a similar quota to digital platforms could help to protect Canadian culture and empower Canadian storytellers, especially those from underrepresented communities.
Kind of ideological motivation there is around the French culture in Canada, as well as elevating and protecting Indigenous voices and ensuring that, you know, that content that's produced, you can think about that disconnect between government actively funding and supporting these sectors and then creatives being sort of squelched or pushed out of streaming or audio kind of opportunities.
At the moment, traditional broadcasters are required to contribute to initiatives that foster, develop, and finance the production of Canadian content. The intention of Bill C-11 is to make opportunities for underrepresented communities, placing the same funding expectations onto streaming platforms so that Canadian stories can thrive and evolve in a streaming market. But despite the intention of the bill, concerns began to surface, especially in regards to what the CRTC, Canada's broadcast regulator, will do.
And so many people in our community, many ordinary Canadian internet users, are worried that the CRTC is going to come in and say, okay, you know, your playlist that's about, I don't know, you know, mobster movies or about like anime or something, suddenly this is supposed to somehow represent 30% Canadian content, which simply isn't workable.
And then there's the fear for regular social media users and professional content creators who use platforms like YouTube and TikTok. Will their content also be regulated?
What C-11 did try to do was to impose the paradigm of the 1970s and 1980s of broadcast scarcity on an infinite internet. And I was really concerned that this would mean that Canadian producers of online content would find their work ghettoized in a kind of a CanCon kids table or kiddies pool.
Senator Paula Simons is an independent member of the Senate of Canada and has also worked for 30 years as a journalist. And she's been an outspoken critic of the bill.
The government has alleviated some of my concerns about C-11 by making it relatively clear in regulation or in proposed regulation that the bill will not apply to small independent creators. So it's not likely to require an independent podcaster or somebody who makes TikTok or YouTube content to conform to Canadian content rules.
While the government has clarified that small content creators won't be affected, Matt says the ambiguous way the bill was written gives them the flexibility to change their mind.
Largely because it didn't clearly separate between commercial content and more private citizen content that's basically freedom of expression. Things like a podcast weren't initially clearly separated from its regulation. So there was a risk, and there still is a risk under C-11, that ordinary people's online expression could be regulated as if it were broadcasting by the CRTC. And we're still actually in the regulatory process working through who exactly it will apply to. So it will certainly apply to platforms like YouTube. It may or may not apply to some of the social media platforms. The CRTC is currently deciding who will be designated there. And so a platform like TikTok, it seems like may be excluded. But in the past, that's been very unclear.
Another problem remains. What is Canadian content? The bill doesn't really specify.
Is it the geography that a television show was filmed in? Is it the director? Is it the producer? Is it the actor? You know, many people were pointing out that Justin Bieber albums may not fit the kind of arcane criteria that we have.
Matt from Open Media explains that the CRTC has a point system for deciding if something is Canadian content or not, but it has its flaws.
A lot of Canadians are quite frustrated with that system, both because a lot of very clearly Canadian storytelling does not meet the points target. The Handmaid's Tale on Netflix, one of probably our most famous author, Margaret Atwood, extremely iconically Canadian story, was shot in Canada, does not qualify as Canadian content because it didn't meet certain production back-end point values. We're like, oh, this particular creative role wasn't Canadian, so you don't qualify for this reason. Whereas people who are very good at sort of manipulating the system are able to get some things into it that are very clearly not Canadian content by any reasonable standard. So there was a documentary about U.S. President Trump that somehow managed to be qualified as Canadian content. There is documentaries on the British Tudors, the royal family there, that are Canadian content. And I think, especially given that this is going to affect a lot of the Canadian internet, many Canadian internet users are kind of worried, wait, am I not going to be Canadian content? Like, how is this going to work exactly? We simply don't know yet.
In the end, how could this bill affect the average Canadian audience?
I think in terms of the material differences that people would actually notice, it ends up feeling imperceptible. But let's just be imaginative for a second. It could look like when you log on to your Netflix, There's a row of films and television shows that say Canadian content or Canadian Indigenous voices or Canadian French films could be have something to do with the categorization so that they're more discoverable.
It could mean making it so every streaming platform had a Canada tab. And you click it and it shows you, here's a whole bunch of amazing Canadian content. Here's some Canadian content that is tailored to your interests as close as we could get to it. Great. Expands choice. We love it. Our community is a big fan of that. It could also mean a replication of what we see in offline broadcasting, which is something like a 30% quota. You have to have this percentage of your catalog be Canadian, which would have very damaging consequences. It could really interfere with the kind of playlists that are assembled for us as Canadians and make them worse and more frustrating and annoying, less tailored to what we're looking for. And of course, if you actually had a 30% content quota, the easiest way to get that isn't to make a bunch of CanCon. It's to block a whole bunch of your content in Canada. And Canadians actually used to live in this world, I think folk in Europe did as well, where if you logged on to Canadian Netflix, you would be looking at like a quarter of the catalog compared to what was in the US.
It's still uncertain what the end result could look like for Canadians. Poor articulation and a lack of clarity from the government has created an onslaught of concerns and confusion. And debates around the bill have led to a specific type of discourse.
There were calls, very successful narratives created around the word censorship, which of course is a lightning rod that this bill was equated with censorship and sort of the government overstepping.
The conservative opposition weaponized the bill to convince people that this was a censorship bill, that this was draconian legislation that was going to violate everybody's free speech rights. And as a result, there was sort of a widespread, almost hysteria in this country about Bill C-11, which was a problematic bill, but was never problematic in the way that the opposition made out. The government, in turn, pretended that any good faith criticism of Bill C-11 was part of this same hysteria. So it was really difficult for me as a critic of Bill C-11, who was interested in what the bill actually said, to make my arguments and have my arguments be heard because they were drowned out by the cacophony of disinformation. And the result was very difficult to have an intellectually honest, good faith discussion about the pros and cons of the legislation. And the process was frightening to me because you could see how easy it was to distract people from the real problems of the bill and at the same time to create this sense of social disaster around a piece of legislation, which, as I say, I think was perhaps maladroit, but certainly wasn't malevolent.
Confusion over Bill C-11 has gone out of control, fueling debates, causing distrust, and leading to outrage aimed towards the government. But Vass Bednar reminds us that it's important not to forget about how much power these companies hold.
The reality is that these companies have so much algorithmic power in terms of what they curate and what they elevate and what we find, that I think it does make a little bit of sense to sort of further empower consumers to find and experience and experiment with Canadian content.
The other bill that has gotten a lot of attention is Bill C-18, the Online News Act, which requires tech giants to pay Canadian news outlets for posting and sharing their links.
This bill deals with a very important topic, which is the sustainability of journalism in Canada.
And in the last 15 years, we've seen around 500 newsrooms close our doors, big and small, in cities, rural, in English, French, different languages.
With print journalism on a downward spiral, Bill C-18's goal is to make Canadian news more sustainable by having them fairly compensated by these tech companies like Google and Meta. But according to Matt Hatfield, the problem is that this strategy is based on a fundamentally false premise,
which is the idea that Google and Meta are earning huge amounts of revenue from the sharing of news on their platforms.
Based on this premise, Bill C-18 essentially says,
we need you to account for all of this value we believe is there, and either pay for it or stop sharing news. That is the choice that was put to them by the bill.
And the company's response wasn't quite what the government had hoped for.
So Meta in particular said, we disagree. news isn't that valuable to us, and we're not going to share news on Meta anymore. And so they have pulled out. You cannot post news links in Canada on Meta platforms now.
That means that we can not only not share Canadian news when it happens, but we can't access international news either. So when there's a war in the Middle East or a war in Eastern Europe, we can't see news stories about it on Instagram or Facebook, which are, frankly, platforms where a lot of Canadians were used to getting their news. So we have really been cut off, and it's been a real body blow to Canadian news publishers because they can't drive traffic through Facebook and Instagram to their sites. And so they're losing readers and they're losing ad revenue.
It's not so much that a lot of your feed is made up of Canadian news stories. That small percentage that was there before was very, very valuable and important to those companies. So currently, as it stands, Meta doesn't seem to be coming back. And a lot of small outlets in Canada are really struggling and suffering.
Another problem arises in terms of funding. Most of the money from C18 would go to content that's already doing well on tech platforms.
So who do you think most of that content is? It's Canada's largest outlets already, including our public broadcaster, the CBC, as well as some of our largest news chains. So it's not directing the money to small Canadian communities where in many cases the outlet's gone. There's no one posting content anymore because that's already disappeared. It's not putting money where it's actually needed for news coverage necessarily. And that has an impact on the type of content that would be getting produced. So if you think about what kind of content does best on Facebook, it's not necessarily long-form public accountability journalism, right? It's like, can you believe this thing happened? It's clickbait. And so one of our concerns is that it would actually be incentivizing news organizations to double down on exactly the worst form of journalism, really quite yellow journalism, that we don't want to see more production of.
Even if these big media companies negotiate a deal with Meta, news outlets may place even more emphasis on creating content that will just maximize the number of clicks, which, again, shows the power of tech giants. As Bill C-18 has moved forward, it's gotten more and more complex. And as Matt says, the government was forced to be more and more prescriptive about how the bill is supposed to work.
The deal that they struck with Google, they've basically given up on a lot of what C-18 was. They're essentially, at the regulation phase, creating an entirely different bill. And it's still a huge open question who is going to be in and out of receiving C-18 funds and what terms they'll be receiving those funds on. So it now looks like both Google and the government will have quite a bit of say in which outlets receive funding. So we've kind of recreated the disadvantages of a public fund where people are going to have questions about the independence of news, frankly. And yet we don't have any of the sort of transparency, due process, public accountability on deciding that process of who gets news funding for what purpose that we would have if we'd actually done the work of setting up a public system for allocating it.
The other more existential problem is that C-18 is still allowing the government extraordinary new powers to regulate what happens in Canadian media.
As a former journalist, Senator Simons has other concerns about the bill.
Just the first week in January, when people were still largely on vacation and not paying attention, the government issued a notice that under Bill C-18, they may allow the CRTC, Canada's broadcast regulator, to set up a code of conduct for journalists.
To Senator Simons, the possibility of a government-imposed code of conduct for journalists is unacceptable and should be viewed as a violation of free speech rights. Yet, surprisingly, most mainstream media outlets in Canada were supportive of the bill.
And that made it hard to have debate about what the problems of the bill might be for the mainstream media, because the publishers themselves were cheerleading for it. And so it worried me to see that even the prospect, the promise of money, was enough to convince publishers to put aside their disinterested, objective position and to frankly campaign for a bill that they thought would benefit them. I think it has backfired. I don't think the bill has benefited them at all. but it was a measure of how desperate the Canadian news media are for any hope of survival at a time of such catastrophic digital disruption and the erosion of all of their traditional revenue streams.
At the end of the day, the internet and its digital platforms are global. What happens in Canada could ultimately have an effect on what happens in the rest of the world. So for Germany and Europe, an important question is whether similar laws could be introduced here, and what could be done better.
I do think, in general, digital legislation is usually more sophisticated and better debated in Europe than Canada, and that's a good thing. I think if I were trying to make a recommendation on what people should pay attention to for digital legislation, it's that we really have to look at what the incentives are for the platforms we're regulating. So pay attention to incentives is my number one lesson. The other one is just, to the extent that tech platforms are a problem, they're not one that any jurisdiction can deal with entirely by themselves. So I would have liked to see Canada work much more closely with Europe and with other countries on understanding some of these problems and regulating them in compatible ways.
Another lesson? It's important to be aware of how the issues are being framed.
I would advise them to do a better job narratively. Talk about the problem appropriately. The problem is not, you know, that big is bad or these companies are too big. Talk about how they abuse their dominance.
At the same time, there's an important takeaway from Canada's unique cultural and media landscape, which may not easily map onto other contexts.
Canadian media policy makes an interesting case study, I think, for European observers, because we are not the United States, and we are also not the European Union. And we have elements of policies that are quite different in sort of an uneasy mix in Canada, because a lot of people in Canada grew up with American media and American media culture. But there's also a really strong European influence, especially in Quebec, where a lot of media policymakers in Quebec look to France and look to the EU for policy ideas. So I think what you can learn from our mistakes is how difficult it is to simultaneously sort of have a North American media culture combined with a European point of view about cultural protectionism. And I think the other thing you can really learn is how dangerously easy it is to weaponize media policy for people who are pursuing their own political agendas to torque and twist any attempt to have any kind of common sense regulation of media to make it look like some kind of global conspiracy to control what people can see and say and read.
Matt suggests that Europe has the potential to handle this matter more effectively.
The EU is becoming the de facto lawmaker for quite a bit of internet regulation, because you both have quite a bit of power on platforms and also the capacity to develop, if not perfect laws, at least reasonable laws. So I wouldn't be too pessimistic, I guess, about the capacity to set meaningful global standards, even from just a large jurisdiction like the EU.
I think many people would like to see more global coordination on these interventions, because, you know, the digital economy doesn't recognize the state boundaries that we do. But in order to get there, we need experimentation. We need first, second, and third movers to demonstrate what's possible and also to make mistakes that we can learn from. And I think those mistakes can actually be really, really valuable from a policy perspective, as opposed to, you know, moving forward, you know, in harmony all at the same time.
And that wraps up another episode of Bull Spotlight, as we explore the complex world of digital legislation in Canada. We looked at two key bills, Bill C-11 and Bill C-18. Their goals, their flaws, as well as their potential impact on the digital landscape. As the EU and other countries navigate through these digital policy challenges, it's crucial to consider the unintended consequences, potential social divides, and the need for global coordination in an interconnected digital world. At a time of growing disinformation, it's become easy for debates about policy to become clouded by the deep distrust people have.
And at a time of growing right-wing extremism and growing polarization, the last thing you want to do is make it look like you are trying to censor voices And at the same time, it's never been more essential that people have access to reliable, authoritative, trusted information. And the huge challenge we face is that neither Bill C-11 nor Bill C-18 has addressed that profound existential crisis.
I'm Haley Choi. Thank you for tuning in to Bull Spotlight. Join us next time as we continue to shed light on critical issues.
Bull Spotlight, a podcast from the Heinrich Böll Foundation.